Thank you. I am delighted to share this day of achievement and celebration with your governors and trustees, with your chancellor and faculty and families. But most importantly, I'm honored to be here with what I know is the best graduating class in the history of the University of North Carolina. Living at an incredible moral moment in history. Few human beings are blessed to anticipate or experience the beginning of both a new century and millennium. How are we going to say thanks for the life, earth, nation, and children that God has entrusted to our care? What legacies, principles, and values will we stand for and send to the future through our children to their children and to a spiritually confused, balkanized, and violent nation and world desperately hungering for moral leadership? How will progress be measured over the next 1,000 years if we survive them? By the kill power and number of weapons of destruction we can produce and traffic at home and abroad, or by our willingness to shrink, indeed destroy, the prison of violence we have constructed in the name of peace and security? Will we be remembered in these last years of the 20th century by how many material things we can manufacture, sell, advertise, and consume, or by our rediscovery of more lasting, non-material measures of success? A new Dow Jones for the quality and purpose of life in our families, neighborhoods, and national community. Will we be remembered by how rapidly technology and corporate merger mania can render human beings and human work obsolete, or by our efforts to find a better balance between corporate profits and corporate caring for children, families, and community? And by our efforts to ensure that technology narrows rather than widens the gap between the haves and the have-nots? Will we be remembered by how much a few at the top can get at the expense of the many at the bottom and in the middle? Or by our concept for a sense of enough for all Americans? Will we be remembered by the glitz and style and banality of too much of our culture, or by the substance of our struggles to rekindle an ethic of caring and justice and community in a nation and world driven too much by money, power, and weaponry? I hope this graduating class will never go out and work just for money. It's not going to save your soul, and it won't help you sleep at night. The answers to all of these questions lie in the values that we stand for, the decisions that we make and insist that our leaders make, and in the actions that we take today. What an opportunity for good or evil we Americans personally and collectively hold in our hands as parents, citizens, corporate, religious, and community leaders, and as titular world leader in the post-Cold War era and post-industrial period on the cusp of the third millennium. 1,000 years ago, the United States was not even a dream. Copernicus and Galileo hadn't told us the Earth was round or revolved around the sun. Gutenberg's Bible had not been written, Wycliffe hadn't translated it into English, and Martin Luther had not tacked his thesis on the church door. The Magna Carta did not exist, Chaucer's and Shakespeare's tales had not been spun, and Bach and Mozart's miraculous music had not been created to heal and soothe our spirits. Many European serfs struggled in bondage while many African and Asian empires flourished in independence. Native Americans peopled our land free of slavery's blight, and Hitler's Holocaust had yet to show us the depths human evil can reach when good men and women remain silent or indifferent. 1,000 years from now, will humankind remain? Will America's dream be alive, be remembered, and be worth remembering? Will the United States be a blip or a beacon in history? Can our founding principle that all men and women are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights become deed and not just creed for every child? Is America's dream big enough for every fifth child who is poor, every sixth child who is black, every seventh child who is Hispanic, and every eighth child who is mentally or physically challenged? Can our children, each of whom comes with the message that God is not yet discouraged of man, said the Indian philosopher Tagore, become the healing agents of our national and world transformation? I hope so, for I believe that protecting children and the vulnerable is the moral litmus test of our humanity, and it is the biggest challenge our nation and world faces, where millions of child lives are ravaged by the wars and neglect and racial, religious, and class divisions of adults. What has happened to us that the killing of children by guns every 2 hours in America has become routine and we're standing for it? Where is our moral outrage? Where is your moral outrage? Why are there 14.5 million children, 5.5 million here in the South, poor, 70% of them in working families, and an American economy that's worth over $8 trillion. Surely this country can get its children ready for school and give every child a healthy start. Why are we not demanding that? What kind of family values do we truly have when we'd rather invest $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year to put our children in prison, but not to invest $1,500 to give them good after-school tutoring and mentoring programs? Why don't we change those values? Not long ago, a young mother walked into a WIC office, a Women's, Infants, and Children's Nutritional Program offices, seeking help to feed her hungry baby. A tired WIC worker saw the baby drinking from a bottle filled with red liquid and was about to reprimand the mother. Didn't she know babies needed milk and not Kool-Aid? As she was about to scold, the young mother broke into tears. She had run out of money 3 days before, hadn't eaten, and had used her last pennies to buy baby formula, which had run out the day before. She knew a baby needed to eat, so she had gone into McDonald's and gotten 2 free things to fill the baby's bottle with, ketchup and water. Now, do you think that this hungry baby is responsible for all of America's ills? For our budget deficit, crime problem, poor education system, as so many political leaders of both parties would have us think? Did this baby cause the structural changes, the shift in jobs from manufacturing to service sectors, the wage stagnation in our labor market, deindustrialization of our cities, and the economic blight in many rural areas? Did this baby and desperate mother control the downsizing of giant corporations, the replacement of human workers by technology, or the exportation of jobs abroad in our global economy? Is this baby, who had a 1 in 3 chance of being born without prenatal care and a 1 in 4 chance of being born poor. The cause or the victim of the widening income gap between rich and poor, which allowed 23,000 poor families with children to live on less income than one entertainment industry executive. Is one corporate leader in the corporate 500 worth more than 225 school teachers in preparing America for the future? This baby did not manufacture or sell the over 220 million guns circulating in our nation that kill a classroom of children every day, every 2 days. And she did not contribute to the pervasive breakdown of moral, family, and community values in our too selfish and secular culture. And she is not responsible for her mother's or father's poverty or behavior or ours. She didn't vote for Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Liberals, or Conservatives. Can't make campaign contributions or lobby, and you and I must assign ourselves to speaking up for this child and speaking up for America's children, because I believe in every cell of my being that the failure to invest in all of our children is going to be the iceberg that sinks our ship of state and destroys our democracy. So we need to become advocates for our children. What can you do? How can each of us make a difference? The first thing, graduates and all of us sitting here, is that I hope we will take parenting and family life seriously. I hope you will plan for being a good father or mother if you choose to have children, or a good aunt and uncle, or a good neighbor, as seriously as you think about your career. And I hope that you will join with us in insisting that those you work for and who represent you take parenting and family life seriously. I hope your generation will have the same high expectation for your girls as for your boys, and raise your sons to be fair to other people's daughters. Young men, remember that your wife is not your mother, and make sure that your children, and recognize that your children need strong fathers and strong mothers. Superwoman has simply collapsed of exhaustion. I hope that you will stress family rituals and be moral examples for your children, and not have them until you are emotionally and economically ready to meet their needs. I hope you will provide the moral example that you want them to reflect. If you lie, they will lie. If you don't value hard work, they won't either. If you spend all of your money and time on yourself and not for civic causes, they won't either. And if you tell or snicker at racial and gender jokes or try to demean any other human being, they will pass on the poison we must eradicate from this land. Do not make hate, violence, and intolerance family values in your home. That is the most important thing we can do to transform America. Secondly, I hope all of us at home and in our professional lives will affirm rather than undermine our children's strengths and differences. A wonderful animal parable illustrates how so many institutions and policies hurt rather than help children. It goes that once upon a time, animals decided they must do something heroic to meet the problems of the new world. So they organized a school. They adopted an activity curriculum consisting of running, climbing, swimming, and flying. And to make it easy to administer, All of the animals had to take all of the subjects. The duck was excellent in swimming, better in fact than his instructor, and made passing grades in flying, but was poor in running. Since he was slow in running, he had to stay after school and drop swimming to practice running. This was kept up until his feet were badly worn and he was only average at last in swimming, but average was acceptable in that school, so nobody worried about it except the duck. The rabbit started at the top of the class in running, but had a nervous breakdown because of so much makeup work in swimming. The squirrel was excellent in climbing until he developed frustration in the flying class, where his teacher made him start from the ground up instead of from the treetop down. He also developed Charlie horses from overexertion and got a C in climbing and a D in running. The eagle was a problem child and was disciplined severely in the climbing class. For although he beat everybody else to the top of the tree, he insisted on using his own way to get up there. By the end of the year, an abnormal eel that could swim exceedingly well and also run, climb and fly a little, had the highest average and was valedictorian. The prairie dog stayed out of school and fought the tax levy because the administration wouldn't add digging and burrowing to the curriculum. They apprenticed their child to a badger and later joined the groundhog and gophers to start a successful private school. I hope that we in all of our ways will ask, is it good for children? Are we fitting our efforts into meeting the needs and respecting the differences of our children rather than fitting them in to what we see as convenient? Third, and I'm almost done, make sure that you make a difference in the life of at least one other child that is not your own. Five women changed the course of history. Moses' mother and sister and the Pharaoh's daughter and two slave midwives who rescued one child, Moses, from the bulrushes. And two slave midwives who stood up when the Pharaoh ordered her and them to kill all male Hebrew babies. These five unlikely social revolutionaries changed the course of history by investing in saving children. I hope you will do the same. Finally, I hope you will never lose hope or be cynical and set about the job of transforming America for our children. President Havel defines hope as the conviction, not that the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out. The more unpropitious the situation when we demonstrate hope, the deeper the hope is. It is this hope which above all, which gives us the hope to live and continually try new things, even in conditions that seem hopeless as ours do here and now. Who would have thought that Soviet and Eastern European communism would crumble in a heap, as much from decay within as from enemies without? Who would have thought that Nelson Mandela would walk out of jail after 27 years of prison and that apartheid would flow without violence? Who would have thought this time last year that Mr. Hatch and Mr. Kennedy would be able to pass a $48 billion child health bill? We need that same attitude of can-do and hope to make sure that every one of our children gets what they need. I hope you will join a mighty movement to leave no child behind. Let me end with a prayer, asking God to forgive our rich and powerful nation, where small babies die of cold quite legally. God, forgive our rich nation where small children suffer from hunger quite legally. God, forgive our rich nation where toddlers and school children die from guns sold quite legally. God, forgive our rich nation that lets children be the poorest group of citizens quite legally. Oh, God, forgive our rich nation that lets the rich continue to get more at the expense of the poor quite legally. Forgive our rich nation which thinks security rests in missiles rather than in mothers and in bombs rather than in babies. Oh, God, forgive our rich nation for not giving you sufficient thanks by giving to others their daily bread. Lord, help us never to confuse what is quite legal with what is just and right in your sight. I hope the graduates of 1998, along with all of us, will go out and build an America for the new century and millennium that will be just and right in God's sight. Godspeed.